Chapter 2. Something so typically Betancourt. My Fallen. The Summons. From the moment I slipped into unconsciousness at the feet of the vicious witch-finder Tantalid, I knew nothing more until I woke, 29 hours later, aboard my gun-cutter. I remembered nothing about the 7 attempts to shock my system back to life, the cardiac massages, the anti-venom shots injected directly into my heart muscle, the fight to make me live again. I learned all about it later, as I slowly recovered. For days, I was as weak as a feline whelp. Most particularly, I knew nothing about the way Tantalid had been denied. Bequin told me, a day or two after my first awakening, it had been something so typically Betancourt. Elizabeth had been hard on my heels up the stairs from the Sacrarium, in time to see Tantalid's arrival. She had known him at once. The Witchfinder is notorious throughout the subsector. He'd been about to kill me, and I was unconscious at his feet, going into anaphylactic shock with the venom bonding and seething in my veins. She'd cried out, fumbling for her weapon. Then, light, hard, powerful light, had streamed in through the stained glass windows. There was a roaring sound. My gun cutter, its lamps on full beam, rose to a hover over the ruined chapel, lighting up the night. Guessing what was about to follow, Bequin had thrown herself down. Betancourt's voice had boomed out from the hull tannoy of the hovering gunship. "Imperial Inquisition! Step away from the Inquisitor now!" Tantalid had squinted up into the glare, his stringy tortoise head turning in the rim of his massive carapace armor. "Ministorum officer!" he had yelled back, his voice amplified by his suit's vox unit. "Back off! Back off now! This heretic is mine!" Bequin grinned as she told me Betancourt's response. "Never argue with a gun cutter, you asshole!" The slave servitors and the cutter's blunt wingtips opened fire, hosing the chapel with autocannon shells. The stained glass windows had all shattered, statues had been decapitated, flagstones had disintegrated. Hit at least once, Tantalid had fallen backwards into the dust and debris. His body had not been found, so I presume the bastard had survived. But he had been smart enough to flee. My prone body had not been touched, even though the chapel around me had been peppered with fire. Typical Betancourt bravado. Typical Betancourt finesse. She was just like her damned father. "Send her to me," I told Bequin as I lay back in my cot, half dead and feeling terrible. Medea Betancourt looked in a few minutes later. Like her father Midas, she was clad in the red-piped black suit of a Glavian pilot, and she proudly wore his old cerise-embroidered jacket. Her skin, like Midas's, like all that of Glavian's, was dark. She grinned at me. "I owe you," I said. Medea shook her head. "Nothing my father wouldn't have done." She sat on the foot of my cot. "He'd have killed Tantalid, though," she decided.
"He was a better shot."
That grin again. Pearl-white teeth framed by ebony skin. "Yes, he was that."
"But you'll do," I smiled.
She saluted and left. Midas Betancourt had been dead for 26 years. I missed him still. He was the closest thing to a friend I had ever had. Bequin and Amos, they were allies, and I trusted them with my life. But Midas... May the God Emperor rot Fade Thuring for taking him. May the God Emperor lead me to Fade Thuring one day, so that I and Medea may avenge Midas. Medea had never known her father. She'd been born a month after his death, raised by her mother on Glavia, and had come into my service by chance. I was her godfather, a promise to Midas. Duty-bound, I had visited Glavia for her ascension to adulthood, and watched her drive a Glavia long prow through the vortex rapids of the Stilt Hills during the rites of majority. One glimpse of her skills had convinced me. Arianod Esu Swidir was dead. So were Gonvax and Cus. The battle in the Sacrarium had been fierce. Ravenor had killed the raging homunculus, but only after it had ripped open his belly and taken off Zhu Zeng's left ear. Gideon Ravenor was in intensive care in the main city infirmary of Lethe. We would collect him once he was out of danger. I wondered how long that would be. I wondered how he would be. He had loved Arianod, loved her dearly. I prayed this loss would not set him back too far. I mourned Cuss and the swordswoman. Cuss had been with me for 19 years. That dark night in the chapel had robbed me of so much. Cuss was buried with full honours in the Imperial Guard Memorial Cenotaph at Lethe Majeure. Arianod was burned on a bare hill west of the Salt Licks. I was too weak to attend either service. Amos brought the sabre Barbarisata to me after the pyre. I wrapped it in a visicloth and a silk sheet. I knew I was duty-bound to return it to the tribal elders of the Esu Swedir on Carthay before long. That would mean a round trip of at least a year. I had no time for it. I put the wrapped sword in my safe box. It barely fitted. As I worked my way back to health, I considered Tantalid. Arno Tantalid had risen from the rank of confessor militant in the Missionaria Galaxia 70 years before to become one of the Ministorum's most feared and ruthless witch-hunters. Like many of his breed, he followed the doctrines of Sebastian Thor with such unswerving precision it bordered on clinical obsession. To most of the common folk of the Imperium, there would be blessed little to choose between an Ordo Xenos Inquisitor such as myself and an Ecclesiarchy witch-killer like Tantalid. We both hunt out the damning darkness that stalks mankind. We are both figures of fear and dread. We are both, so it seems, laws unto ourselves. Twinned though we may be in so many ways, we could not be more distinct. It is my personal belief that the Adeptus Ministorum, the Imperium's vast organ of faith and worship, should focus its entire attention on the promulgation of the true church of the God Emperor and leave the persecution of heretics to the Inquisition. Our jurisdictions often clash. There have, to my certain knowledge, been 2 wars of faith in the last century, provoked and sustained by just such rivalry. Tantalid and I had locked horns twice before. On Braddle's World, 5 decades earlier, we had faced each other across the marble floor of a synod court, arguing for the right to extradite the psyker Elbone Parsival. On that occasion, he had triumphed, thanks mainly to the strict Thorian mindset of the Ministorum elders of Braddle's World. Then, just 8 years ago, our paths had crossed again on Kumar. Tantalid's fanatical hatred, indeed, I would venture fear, of the psyker was by then insurmountable. I made no secret of the fact that I employed psychic methods in the pursuit of my work. There were psychic adepts in my staff, and I myself had worked to develop my own psychic abilities over the years. Such is my right, as an authorized bearer of the Inquisition's seal. In my eyes, he was a blinkered zealot with a psychotic streak. In his, I was the spawn of witches and a heretic. No courtroom argument for us on Kumar. A little war instead. It lasted an afternoon and raged through the tiered streets of the oasis town at Unat Akim. 28 latent psykers, none older than 14, had been rooted out of the population of Kumar's sprawling capital city during a purge, and sequestered prior to their collection by the black ships. They were recruits, a precious resource, untainted and ready to be shaped by the Adeptus Astropathicus into worthy servants of the God Emperor. Some of them, perhaps, would have the ultimate honour of joining the choir of the Astronomicon. They were frightened and confused, but this was their salvation. Better to be found early and turned to good service than to remain undetected and become tainted, corrupt, and a threat to our entire society. But before the black ships could arrive to take them, they were spirited away by renegade slavers working in collusion with corrupt officials in the local administratum. Vast sums could be made on the black market for unregistered, virgin psychic slaves. I followed the slaver's trail across the Sife Dunes to Unat Akim with the intention of liberating the youngsters. Tantalid made his way there to exterminate them all as witches. By the end of the fight, I had driven the witchfinder and his cohorts, mostly foot soldiers of the Fratris militia, out of the oasis town. 2 of the young psychers had been killed in the crossfire, but the others were safely transferred into the hands of the Astropathicus. Tantalid, fleeing Kumar to lick his wounds, had tried to have me declared heretic, but the charges were swiftly overturned. The Ministorum had, at that time, no wish to court conflict with their allies in the Inquisition. I had expected, known even, that Tantalid would return some time to plague me. It was a personal matter now, one which his fanatical disposition would fix upon and transform into a holy calling. By the last I had heard, he had been leading an ecclesiarchy mission into the Ophidian subsector in support of the century-long purge campaign there. I wondered what had brought him to Lethe 11 at so inopportune a moment. By the time I was back on my feet, 2 weeks later, the Dark Knight was over, and I knew the answer, in general, if not specific terms. I was hobbling around on a cane in the private mansion I had rented in Lethe Majeure when Amos brought me the news. The great Ophidian campaign was over.
"Great success," he announced. "The last action took place at Dolcine 4 months ago, and the War Master has declared the subsector cleansed. A famous victory, don't you think?"
"Yes, I should hope so. It's taken them long enough."
"Gregor, Gregor, even with a force as large as the hallowed battle fleet Scarus, the subjugation of a subsector is an immense task. That it took the best part of a century is nothing. The pacification of the Extempus subsector took 400 years.
He paused.
"You're toying with me, aren't you?"
I nodded. He was very easy to wind up. Amos shook his head and eased his ancient body down into one of the leather chairs.
"Martial law still dominates, I understand, and caretaker governments have been established on the key worlds. But the War Master himself is returning with the bulk of the fleet in triumph, setting foot in this subsector again for the first time in 100 years.
I stood by the open windows, looking out from the mansion's first floor across the grey roofs of Lethe Majeure, which seemed to coat the hills of the Tito Basin like the scaled hide of some prehistoric reptile. The sky was a magnolia haze, and a light breeze breathed. It was almost impossible now to picture this place beset by the filthy permanent shadows of the Dark Knight. Now, perhaps, I knew why Tantalid had returned. The Ophidian War was over, and his holy mission concluded with it. "I remember them setting out, don't you?" I asked. A foolish question. My savant was a data addict, driven since the age of 42 standard to collect and retain all manner of information, thanks to a meme virus he had contracted. There was no possibility of him forgetting anything. He scratched the side of his hooked nose where his heavy augmetic eyepieces touched.
"How could either of us forget that?" he replied. "The summer of 240, hunting the Glor clan on Gudrun during the very founding itself."
Indeed, we had played a particular role in delaying the start of the Ophidian campaign. The War Master, or Lord Militant, as he had been back then, had been all but set to launch his purge into Ophidian space when my investigation of the heretic Glor family had triggered a mass uprising later known as the Helican Schism. To his great surprise and displeasure, the War Master had been abruptly forced to redirect his readied forces in a pacification of his very own subsector. War Master Honorius. Honorius Magnus, they were calling him. I had never met him, nor had I much wish to. A brutal man, as are so many of his kind. It takes a special mindset, a special brutality, to crush planets and populations.
"There is to be a great jubilation on Thracian Primaris," Amos said. "A holy novena congregated by the Synod of the High Ecclesiarchy. It is rumored that the Imperial Lord Commander Helican himself will attend, specifically to bestow upon the War Master the rank of Feudal Protector."
"I'm sure he'll be very pleased. Another heavy medallion to throw at his officers when he's annoyed."
"You're not tempted to attend?"
I laughed. In truth, I had thought to return to the Helican subsector capital before long. Thracian Primaris, the most massive, industrialized, and populated world in the subsector, had wrested capital planet status from ancient Gudrun after the disgrace and ferment of the schism, finally achieving the preeminence it felt its size and power had long deserved. It was now the chief imperial planet of this region. There was work to be done, reports to be filed and presented, and those things could best be achieved by returning to my property on Thracian, my base of operations, near to the palace of the Inquisition. But I had little love for Thracian Primaris. It was an ugly place, and I only made my headquarters there out of convenience. The thought of pomp and ceremony and festivals filled me with quiet dread. Perhaps I would go to Messina instead, or to the quiet of Gudrun, where I maintained a small, comfortable estate.
"The Inquisition is to attend in great strength. Lord Rorkin himself."
I waved a hand in Amos's direction. "Does it appeal to you?"
"No."
"Are there not better uses for our time? Pressing matters? things that would be more easily achieved away from such overblown distractions.
Most certainly,
he said. Then I think you know my mind.
I think I do, Gregor,
he said, rising to his feet and reaching into the pocket of his green robe.
And therefore I'm fully prepared for the fact that you're going to curse me when I give you this.
He held out a small data slate, an encrypted message tile whose contents had been received and stored by the astropaths. The official seal of the Inquisition was stamped across its front.